Chapter 27. When Ryder saw the gleaming edge of the knife in Officer Kim's hand, he screamed, but the tape over his mouth stopped the sound.
"Easy, dickhead," Kim said. "Does this look like a good time to go flopping around?"
Ryder craned his chin down to his chest as the cop lifted him by the collar of his sweatshirt and slipped the blade through the neck hole. Holding the fabric tight, he sliced it all the way down the front of Ryder's body, exposing the flesh of his chest and belly like a boat creating a wake in the water. The blade hung up on the sweatshirt's waistband, causing Officer Kim to cuss under his breath.
"All the way off, or just expose the stomach?" Officer Al asked.
Ryder looked over and saw that Jeff had been turned onto his back, and his shirt had been opened the same way.
"This will do," Kim said.
He grabbed Ryder by the front of his pants, behind his belt buckle, and by his hair, and lifted him off the floor.
"Carry them to the table."
Ryder was oddly aware and surprised that the belt digging into the small of his back hurt more than the fist in his hair. He couldn't turn his head to see if Jeff was being carried too, but he heard footsteps on his left. The lights became much brighter. Kim grunted as he lifted Ryder to chest height and then dumped him on the table, right on top of his cuffed wrists. A second later, Jeff landed next to him, a foot or two away. He looked even more terrified than Ryder felt.
"Remember,"
Ryder said silently, hoping that somehow his brother could hear him.
"We're going to try to be brave."
"Turn the camera on again," Officer Kim said as he bloused open the remainder of Ryder's sweatshirt and tucked the edges underneath him, between his cuffed hands and the small of his back. He did the same thing to Jeff.
"We're on," the most recent arrival said from behind the camera.
"Meet my friends, Ryder and Jeffrey," Officer Kim said. He was pulling on some rubber gloves. "I'm sorry to say that they must pay for their mother's mistake."
"What mistake? What was happening?"
"In these days of modern medicine, we've come to believe that surviving surgery is dependent upon effective anesthesia. That's just not true. For many years..."
For the first time, Ryder saw the scalpel in Kim's hand. It gleamed in the reflected glare of the bright lights.
"Astonishing ability to sustain pain."
Ryder screamed again, his terror muffled by the tape around his mouth. He bucked his body to get away, but Kim put a gloved hand on the center of his chest.
"Remember what I told you about moving around too much."
Jonathan and Boxer stood on either side of the front door while Gale watched through the window. Dawkins had moved to the red side, where, when the balloon went up in just a minute or two, he'd put bullets through the generator to kill the power. Jonathan tested the thumb latch on the door panel and whispered a curse when he found it didn't move.
"Front door is locked," he whispered over the air.
"Git,"
Boxer said. He nudged Jonathan out of the way and pressed a GPC, General Purpose Charge, into place over the lock assembly. He pressed the detonator into place and stepped back.
"Charge is ready."
"I know y'all know this," Jonathan said, "but be sure you see your targets and watch your background. Gunslinger, are you ready?"
"Affirmative."
"Big guy?"
"Yup."
"Thor?"
"All set."
"Okay," Jonathan said. "On 0, 3, 2.
Ordinarily, we would use a paralytic drug at this stage to keep the patient from inadvertently killing himself with wild gyrations. Officer Kim had moved to a position on Ryder's right. The scalpel came closer, held in a special, delicate way. With his other hand, Kim stretched the skin of Ryder's stomach taut.
"Hold still now, Rai-Rai. You're going to feel..."
In an instant, the world came apart in a jumble of noise. First, there was a string of gunfire. Then an explosion shook everything as the lights went out. In that tiny fraction of a second, after a huge boom, the darkness was beyond dark. Dark like down in the hole. Then the shouting started. Jonathan turned away and shut his eyes as the GPC blasted a nearly perfect round hole in the wall where the lock assembly had been. The door flew inward, and it was time to move. Jonathan led with Gale in the number two slot and Big Guy bringing up the rear.
"Kendalls, stay down!" he yelled. "Don't move!"
It was a gift to know exactly where his targets were. As soon as he cleared the entryway, he pivoted left and fired two quick rounds through Timur Yamadayev's forehead. Someone else, boxers, he thought, hit the taller captor, the one in regular clothes, but he didn't go down. Instead, he grabbed Jeff by his shackled ankles and pulled him toward the edge of the table, as if to pull him onto the ground. But he was working blind and making a mess of it, mostly just spinning the kid in place. On the other side of the table, the captor in the surgical mask knew exactly what he was doing. He lifted Ryder by the underside of his jaw and was slashing at the boy's chest with the scalpel blade. In his peripheral vision, Jonathan saw Big Guy dart that way. He turned his attention back to the other attacker manhandling Jeff, the younger brother. Jonathan moved in on the man, lifted him by his collar, and shot him through the temple, the spray of brains luminescent in the glow of his night vision. On the other side of the table, a man screamed, and there was the unmistakable sound of bones snapping. The surgeon's hand, the one that used to hold the scalpel, was backwards, now at the end of his arm. Jonathan cringed as he watched boxers hyperextend the arm and slam his fist onto the exposed elbow, bending it back on itself. Ryder was on the floor writhing at boxer's feet, trying to get away. Jeff was still on the table, frozen.
"Kendall boys," Jonathan yelled, "we are here to rescue you. You are out of danger."
He put a hand on Jeff's chest in hopes of reassuring him, but got exactly the opposite result. The kid panicked. He bucked and screamed, the words unintelligible. Across the table, boxers shoved the doctor hard, sending him backpedaling in the dark until he fell on his mangled arm.
"Settle down, Jeff,"
Jonathan said softly, but the boy was beyond terrified, beyond understanding.
"Gunslinger, Thor, get the kids out of here, please."
He more sensed than watched his team swing into action, his attention focused on boxers.
"Fight back, you piece of shit,"
Big Guy said as he moved in on the doctor.
"What? Can't hold your own when they come a little bigger?"
He stomped his heel down onto the surgeon's remaining hand, his left, and more bones broke. The man screamed again. Boxers laughed.
"What's that?" he said. "I can't hear you."
He stomped again on the same hand.
"Big Guy,"
Jonathan said over the air, and then he reached to his radio and switched back to PTT mode, pushed to talk.
"Big Guy,"
he said again.
"Not now, Scorpion," he said. "I'm busy."
He drew his K-bar knife from its sheath on his vest.
"What do you say, Doc? I can carve on people, too."
"Big Guy, listen to me. We're not about this."
Boxers lifted the surgeon from the floor by his jaw, the same grip that had been used on Ryder Kendall.
"No, you're not about this," he said. "For human waste like this, I am all about this."
He slashed his knife across the surgeon's eyes.
"God damn it!"
Jonathan shouted.
"Stop!"
boxers tossed his victim back onto the floor.
I can do this all night.
The man howled. He was terrified. From the way he moved, Jonathan could tell that he was trying to protect himself, but nothing worked. Everything was broken.
Hurts, doesn't it, you piece of shit?
This was wrong. Boxers was in a frenzy, spun up beyond control. Jonathan had seen him like this only once before, and it had caused an early separation from the army for both of them. Jonathan raised his MP7 to shoot the suffering man, but as the IR laser beam settled on the surgeon's head, Boxers whirled and grabbed the rifle's foregrip, pushing it off aim.
Stay out of this, Dig, he growled. If you can't take it, get the hell out.
Jonathan had never been on the wrong end of Big Guy's menace before. The temperature of his bloodstream dropped 20 degrees. Jonathan lifted his NVGs out of the way and stared up at Big Guy's silhouette.
Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
Boxers said nothing, didn't move. His chest heaved, and his breathing came in loud gulps.
Get your hands off my firearm,
Jonathan said. Control returned over the course of 15 or 20 seconds. Jonathan felt Big Guy's fist release his gun. As Jonathan rocked his NVGs back over his eyes, Boxers lifted his own out of the way.
I'm sorry, boss. I don't...
His voice trailed away.
Go find the rest of the team, Jonathan said. Help settle those boys down and see if they need medical.
Look, Scorp.
We're fine, Big Guy, he said.
Really? Get out of here and let me finish this.
Boxers rested a hand on Jonathan's shoulder and gave it a squeeze. It was as close to a hug as Big Guy could manage. They'd talk about this later, hopefully over some single malt. But for now, it was over. Jonathan turned back to the suffering man on the floor. Blood from his eyes had transformed his face into a gleaming wet mess. Jonathan had never been able to abide torture. Even in his violent line of work, there had to be rules, lines never crossed. For him, torture was the most vivid line of all. Not that there wasn't satisfaction to be gleaned from watching the suffering of a monster who had caused so much suffering for others.
Please help me,
the doctor said. Blood spattered from his mouth on the hard consonants. Jonathan stooped to his haunches, adjusting his weaponry so it wouldn't poke him.
Was it worth it?
He asked.
Whatever this was about, was it worth all of this?
The man only moaned.
So, what's the target?
Jonathan asked.
We know about the VX and the Mexican connection, but the target is one detail we don't know. What can you tell me about that?
Screw you,
the man said. For a second or two, Jonathan had to fight a nearly overwhelming urge to punch his broken bones again.
Bad time to cop an attitude, dickhead, he said.
The surgeon spat a wad of blood.
Tell you what, Jonathan said. If you answer my question, I'll put a bullet through your head and make all of this end quickly. If you sit there just looking ugly as shit, I'll walk away and let the suffering go on. You'll be blind and crippled while you starve to death or get eaten up by gangrene. Hell, I'll even leave the door open so maybe you can literally get eaten up by something. There are cougars up in these parts, aren't there?
I don't give a shit what you do,
the man said. Jonathan smiled. There was no humor in it.
A soldier to the end, huh?
The man spat another wad.
Okay, then, Jonathan said. Have it your way.
He grunted as he pressed himself back up to standing.
I'll leave you alone with your pain.
As Jonathan started toward the door, he had every intention of staying true to his word. In the end, though, he couldn't do it. Suffering was suffering, and torture was torture. He turned, raised his MP7 to his shoulder, and settled the laser on what was left of the doctor's right eye.
"Get that gate open,"
Jonathan said into his radio as he stepped out into the yard.
"We've made a lot of noise, and I want to get on the road. Break, break, Mother Hen, Scorpion, Cena secure, 3 tangos sleeping."
"I copy, Scorpion," she said. "I can't believe what they were about to do to those poor children."
Jonathan had forgotten that Venice could monitor Roxy's video signal.
"Big guy, if you get your drone to fly higher, I can keep an eye out for approaching vehicles."
"Roger that,"
Boxer said. 10 seconds later, Roxy's rotor blade spun faster and louder, and its silhouette disappeared into the night. The Kendall boys lay in the grass and the darkness, where Gale and Dawkins were trying to comfort them. They'd settled down considerably from a few minutes ago, but they were still trussed up and terrified. The tape had been removed from their mouths, but not much else had changed.
"Goggles up,"
Jonathan said as he approached, and he pulled a white light mini maglite from its loop on his vest.
"Good evening, boys," he said. "Sorry we took so long."
He kept his tone light, not wanting to trigger another panic attack or a pity party. Jonathan tapped Dawkins on the top of his helmet to get his attention.
"Take security," he said.
Dawkins arose, brushed himself off, and rearranged his weapon slings. While everyone else was engaged in focused work, it was always a good idea for one person's sole job to keep an eye out for approaching hazards. Tonight, that was Dawkins's job. Jonathan directed the beam of his light to the older boy's chest, where he was bleeding from a half-dozen lacerations.
"You're Ryder, right?"
The boy nodded. Jonathan shifted to the other one.
"And you're Jeffrey?"
Another nod.
"Good,"
Jonathan said with a smile he hoped they could see.
"I'd hate to think we made all this mess while rescuing the wrong kids."
He leaned in to get a closer look at Ryder's chest. All but one appeared to be purely superficial, maybe requiring a few stitches, maybe not. One of the slashes was concerning, though. It was at the boy's diaphragm, where the belly meets the chest, and a glob of subcutaneous fat had evulsed through the laceration.
"I need to get a closer look at this," he said. "I'll try not to hurt you."
Ryder jerked back and brought his knees up in a defensive posture. Jonathan sat taller and presented his hands in surrender.
"Okay," he said. "I won't touch. Are you having any trouble breathing?"
The boy shook his head, no.
"Could you speak to me, please?" Jonathan said. "It's one of the ways I can tell how badly hurt you are."
"I can breathe fine," he said.
"Count to 10 for me," Jonathan instructed. "Forward and back."
Ryder did as he was told. Jonathan turned to Jeff.
"Your turn."
"Likewise."
"What does that do?"
Jeff said.
"What, counting? That tells me that you can hear, understand, respond, and speak in complete thoughts. If you'd said 126 LMNOR, I'd have been worried."
He winked. Jeff smiled. Jonathan's earbud popped, and Boxer's voice said,
"Charges set on the gate."
"Stand by," Jonathan said. "There's going to be another explosion," he said to the kids. "You won't get hurt, but Gunslinger and I are going to cover your ears. Close your eyes."
Jonathan and Gale each straddled a kid, knees in the dirt, backs facing the gate. Their own earpieces would protect their eardrums from the overpressure, so they cupped their palms over the boy's ears.
"We're all set,"
he said on the radio.
Fire in the hole! Fire in the hole! Fire in the hole!
The explosion was a fraction of the size of the previous one. Jonathan guessed that Big Guy had just used a couple of loops of detonating cord.
What did you do? Ryder asked.
We opened the gate, Jonathan replied. With style.
My wrists hurt, Jeff said. Can you get these handcuffs off?
When my big friend brings our vehicle around, we can get them off, Jonathan said. We have keys inside.
Are you the police? Ryder asked.
FBI, Jonathan said. He hated lying to the kids, but the truth was too complicated, and frankly, none of their business.
What about those other guys? Jeff said.
It wasn't clear if he was speaking to Jonathan or Ryder.
The guys in their underwear.
Jonathan and Gail exchanged confused glances.
Sweetie, I'm afraid we don't know what you're talking about, Gail said.
Ryder pointed up the hill with his forehead.
There were two creepy guys up there the other day who were hanging out in nothing but their underwear.
Are they there all the time?
Jonathan asked.
We only saw them once, Ryder said. They went in and out of the house on the hill.
Which one?
The one on the left. Officer Kim hated it when we saw them,
Jeff said.
He got really, really mad. My wrists really hurt.
Headlights approached from the woods.
Is that you approaching the gate, Big Guy?
It is. And everything's bulletproof, so fire at will.
A beat.
Don't actually shoot.
Jonathan smiled. Karma could be a bitch, and some words should not be allowed simply to hang out there. Jonathan said,
Be advised that PC-1's wounds do not appear to be life-threatening. He doesn't want them handled, but I'm hoping someone can talk him into letting you dress and bandage them.
He looked straight at Ryder as he made his report.
Break. Mother Hen, how are we looking from above?
Not a soul is moving, except for you guys.
I copy.
The Batmobile closed to within a few yards of the kids, stopping when they were in the brightest wash of the headlights. Jonathan stood and gave Gail a hand, getting to her feet.
Slinger, he said in a low tone, I want you to take care of freeing these kids and packaging them for transport out of here. Get them inside the vehicle and give them some water and food. Let them get warm and talk to them.
You going up the hill to investigate the outbuildings? She asked.
Yeah. I'm going to take Big Guy with me and leave Thor here with you.
She gave a half-hearted thumbs up. He knew she didn't like to get left out of the cool stuff.
The clock's ticking, he said. You're a hell of a lot better at the touchy-feely stuff, and Big Guy sucks at it. You'll scare them to death.
I get it, she said.
She pivoted toward Dawkins.
Thor,
she called, pulling his gaze.
You and I are going to get Ryder and Jeff ready to get out of here and get warm.
Boxers was just climbing down from the Batmobile when Jonathan snagged him by his arm.
Come with me, Big Guy, he said. You and I are going for a walk.
At the summit of the hill, before committing to the next step, Jonathan made Boxers cycle through plain light, IR, and UV lenses as Roxy flew in a low circle around each of the three buildings. Nothing moved. Still, they advanced as if bad guys were lying in wait for them. Rules were rules for a reason. And when you tempted fate as regularly as Jonathan did with his team, every cut corner was an unnecessary liability. The willingness to do things the right way every time was what separated professionals from wannabes. The plastic boxes with self-contained breathing apparatuses on the exterior wall pretty much cut to the chase, as far as Jonathan was concerned. Then a peek inside at the ventilated workstations and laboratory equipment sealed his decision. A scary facility under any circumstances,
The green hues of IR illumination through NVGs made it look even worse.
"We're not going in there," he said.
"I knew there was a reason I liked you,"
Boxer said.
"We'll let Wolverine know, and she can handle the investigation and clean up."
"Chemweps scare the piss out of me,"
Big Guy said. This from a man who rarely confessed to being frightened of anything. The next building was the smallest of the three, and it revealed itself to be nothing more than a run-of-the-mill storage shed.
"This last one looks interesting,"
Boxers observed. Jonathan moved to the window in the nearest side, the green or left-hand side, and took a look. The gingham curtains told Jonathan that someone had once cared about this place, but their sun-brittleness told him that that time had passed years ago. He shone his light through the glass and illuminated what might have been a dorm room. Twin beds defined the outer perimeter, and a folding card table dominated the middle. Clothes and assorted junk lay scattered everywhere.
"Nobody's home," Jonathan said. "Let's go in."
Boxers moved to the front door, stepped back, and then fired the sole of his boot into the door, which exploded inward.
"Was it locked?"
Jonathan asked.
"I have no idea,"
Big Guy said.
"It's not now."
Jonathan scanned the mess with his light.
"Any theories?"
"They should have bathed more often,"
Boxer said.
"Smells like a fart in here."
That was exactly what it smelled like. Body odor combined with odd spices and old sweat.
"Why would they live in this tiny place all the way up here when they have that whole cabin down the hill?"
"Maybe they got thrown out to make room for the kids,"
Big Guy said. "As good a theory as any."
"There's nothing in here, boss."
Jonathan didn't answer. Instead, his attention was drawn to the papers strewn across the top of the table. A dozen or more laser-printed pages had been carefully stacked in one corner of the tabletop. That stack of papers was the only neat thing in the whole room. That meant it was important. His earbud popped.
"Scorpion, Mother Hen, there's activity on Hawks Mountain Road. A vehicle approaching. A truck of some sort. A pickup."
Jonathan shot a look to Boxers, who already had his screen out of his pocket. He adjusted the image with his thumbs.
"Not a cop," he said, "unless he's in an unmarked vehicle."
Big Guy watched some more, and Jonathan watched him watch. When Boxer's shoulders relaxed, Jonathan breathed again.
"Just somebody passing through."
Still, it was a reminder that there was a penalty for dawdling. Jonathan scooped up the pile of stacked papers, turned his light off, and brought his NVGs back down.
"Gunslinger, Scorpion, we're done here. Coming down."